come in the rest of the way that way.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get this, get started. Call the meeting to order. So, citizens' comments. Citizens, I always say it three times because that's what I hear everyone else do. I don't know if that's required. Citizens' comments. Citizens' comments are closed. Approval of minutes from the November 15, 2022 Land Information Council meeting. Peggy distributed those, so.
Move to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Scott, turn it over to you for the WLIP compliance status.
Thank you, Sean. To give you an idea of where we are on the Wisconsin Land Information Grant Program, in January, we signed the 2023 grant agreement. We'll talk about that project here in a few minutes to go through some of those details. That is completed. The version 9 parcel submittal, this is the data that all 72 counties send to the state of Wisconsin. It's assembled into a statewide parcel map is what they call it. We did that for the ninth iteration, the ninth year now. That was completed in February. That data should be available usually midsummer. They're looking over the data now. We've been given preliminary approval of that data. They could come back and ask us for more, but typically it's very small edits, if anything. Our 2023 expenditure activity report, that is something I do in conjunction with the finance department. I have just started that. I will be sending that to them in May, and then Barna will help me out, and we'll have that to the state of Wisconsin by the end of June. And then the last item we will have for the year is our grant application, which will be due on December 31st. And we'll talk about that project as this committee needs to approve whatever that is, very likely at our late November, early December land council meeting. So as far as open projects, we have our 2021 project, and this was our $50,000 grant to rewrite our interactive mapping. I'm happy to report that we are 90% of the way through that project right now. We have an application that's being received very well so far by the outside, and we know that because we've put out a beta site right now. So if you go to the mapping portion on KenoshaCounty.org, you will see that we have a beta site out there. The public can use it, and I think it's going very well thus far. It's being written in-house by our IT department, as well as with some assistance from my office as well. And we have to have that done by June 30th here, and I'm happy to report we're going to finish it by that time. Tentatively, we're looking at right around June 1st for the rollout of that final product. Does that sound right?
When we rolled out the first one, we did some little roadshow things. Are we planning on doing that again with the new version? Like, I remember at some expo standing there showing people how to use it, like general public people and stuff like that.
We will. It's my hope to get together with the Realtors Association in the area and so forth and give a dog and pony show on how to use the site and how to use specific functions that are in the application and so forth.
I think Terry just volunteered to do that, didn't she? That's what I heard.
I may have been involved in the last one, so if you need assistance, I will help you out.
Thank you. Any questions on the interactive mapping project?
Didn't you have something last week that was kind of showing it off to other locals? Other local organizations that Jonathan and Patricia was at?
So there's an organization called the Southeast Wisconsin Technical ESRI Users Group. SUETUG is the acronym. And it's all the GIS people in the southeast part of the state.
That acronym needs work. I'm just throwing that out there.
I agree.
It's rough.
It's a very valuable organization for the technical people that write such applications and so forth. So Jonathan Crescent from IT and Patricia Pendleton from my office took that application, and they displayed it to everyone that was there. It was attended by about 50 people, and it was very well received thus far. So we're using a newer ESRI technology that not a lot of counties have applied to their core GIS mapping site. And so we're one of the first ones to dip our toes in that water, and it's going very well so far. I think we made the right move based on what we've been able to create thus far. Mike, do you have anything you want to add?
That's exactly what I heard as well. That's very good feedback from that. A lot of interest from other organizations with what we're doing with it, because it does sound like that we're more on the cutting edge of using those tools than other counties and municipalities and stuff. So there was a lot of interest in how do we make it work, and can we share some information and share how we're doing that. And I thought that was good collaboration there.
We have a Jonathan Crescent in IT is a very talented programmer, and that's a big really knows how to push the boundaries of using those new tools, and it's been a great thing for us. So we would just like to encourage everyone to feel free to use the beta site. It's available right now, and the full application will be available around June 1st, and if you have any issues, please let us know. We'd be happy to hear about it.
So I'm sure you guys have thought of this because you guys do this on the regular basis, but when we do the full rollout on June 1st, so all those links that we have, like between property inquiry and that, then it'll be redirected on June 1st to the new beta version instead of the old version then. And have we let the city of Kenosha know? Because I know they have a link on their website and their property info section that links to our interactive mapping stuff. So we might want to drop them a note and be like, hey guys, you might want to change that. It's going away.
Well, and that will be the issue for anyone that has it bookmarked or whatever. So we're not planning on just turning off the old one on the first. We will have a transition period where we're kind of saying, you know, hey, we got a new version out there. You guys need to update your links and stuff to move towards that.
Yeah, because theirs is actually built into their site to direct them to GIS. It's in, when you look up a property, they have a tab for GIS, and it links right to our site. So, yeah, we probably should give them. I don't think any of the other munis have anything like that on their muni sites, or do they, and maybe their planning section that I never look at?
There are. I think Bristol has
Bristol does? Okay.
Has a link, possibly. Might be. We will get those updated or work with the munis to make sure they are.
We'll notify them. I mean, we can't control what they do.
Be like, here's the new link.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can lead the horse to the water, but we can't make them drink. Yes.
Any other questions on the interactive mapping rewrite? No? That will take care of our 2021 grant, so we will be receiving the second half payment of $25,000 for that. We received the first $25,000 payment at the beginning of the project. That takes us to our 2022 grant project, and this grant was used specifically for the scanning and indexing of many documents in the Register of Deeds office as well as in Terry's office. So we're just in the beginning stages of that project. We're about 20% of the way through right now. We've got all of the projects identified. We've got a big long list, and we're beginning to tackle them now. That project has to be completed by December 31st. Terry, do you want to talk about what documents we're scanning?
So we have a few different tranches in mine and Reggie's offices that we're looking at after they completed the ROD project with way less money than they anticipated needing for the ROD project. So now we're moving on to some of our older records. So one of the things we're doing is we're converting our old microfiche tax rolls that are sitting in a drawer right now that we don't have anywhere else. We're converting those to digital. We're working with IT to create a site where the public then can just go to that site and search those old tax rolls by themselves, so we don't have to dig around at them. So when somebody comes and wants to find out, you know, what their taxes were, what their assessed value was in, you know, 1989, I can just be like, here's the link, go look it up, have a nice day. So we're working on that. We're also converting some of the old books that we have back in our vault of the tax rolls that I think Land Info is pretty much the only ones that uses them. They're the only reason I keep them, because they're the years that we converted parcel numbers, I think, and so there's some importance to those books for them. So we're going to convert those to digital so they don't have to come and dig around in the big fat books again. We're also converting our lottery credit applications and removal forms, and we're actually attaching them in the DTM to the parcels so that when people call and they ask for that confirmation, we don't have to go dig around. We can just send them a copy of their application via email. So that'll be really nice and good for the public to have that out there electronically. And then our bankruptcy files. We have a lot of what I'll call repeat filers, so it'll be delightful to have those all at our fingertips under the person's name and case number so that when they file again, we have their old file right there instead of digging through the 8 file cabinets of bankruptcy files we currently have. So those are kind of stuff. But the big one on Reggie's side that are kind of a team effort is our tax deed files. So those properties that we have taken for back taxes, many of which are like those floodplain properties that we've deeded over and all that, currently they take up, I think, 6 or 8 drawers of file cabinet space down there. And so we're going to scan those in, get those attached to the parcel numbers that they're associated with so that they can be easily searched going forward. So those are kind of the big ones. So it's really getting rid of a lot of paper and a lot of cumbersome searching we have right now. ROD was a bigger project that I would not be qualified to talk about as far as their indexing of their records. So
that was the indexing of a particular grantor grantee books that they had down in their office, some older ones. And with that effort, Joellen states that she's pretty much done scanning everything in her office. So that's going to clean this up for us. So
what do you have left?
Most of the stuff that I have left would not be land records related. Most of that is finance related stuff. So, you know, at a future date in the regular budget, if we have room to scan some of those old stuff in, that would be great. But it's not really land records related, so I would not feel good throwing that on here. I have a few things. I have some current bankruptcy files, like few smaller like land records things, but those are my big ones that are my top priority ones. But the other stuff I have are pretty much more financial records stuff that we have to keep, but really nobody ever looks at, and I would be totally fine with getting rid of all that paper and having them out there. So
and I ask because when we're going for the WLIP grant included in the budget, there were detailed questions about what was going to be left to scan that I did not have the answers to.
I know Reggie has a ton of her records that wouldn't qualify for this grant that she had on her list outside of the tax deed files that she would like to see going forward, but I don't think they would qualify for this because they're not land records related.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And I'm going to move on to the 2023 grant. That was a $70,000 grant. 3 different projects that we chose to use those funds on. One of them is additional scanning in the treasurer's office. So everything Terry just talked about isn't necessarily going to be on the 2022 grant. It's going to be spread out between the 2022 and the 2023 grant. So there's $83,000 there for scanning projects. If we find out we don't need all $83,000, we can repurpose those funds if we need to, and we'll talk about one such project a little later today. I have a feeling we will use it. We'll see how the...
Yeah, we'll see how much we have left over. It's hard to know. Reggie just got all of those files kind of counted to give the guy at the scanning company the count for her files. And she's got a lot of what I'll call weird crap in those files because there's a lot of like notes that are, you know, stapled onto things and, you know, miscellaneous. Because they go back a long time for our tax deed records. So they're not in what I would call a uniform style. So I think it's going to take a little time and money to get those in, where like most of my bankruptcy files and stuff, those are pretty much straightforward, one-sided things that can be scanned pretty easy and quickly. Those, I think the tax deed records are gonna take a lot more manual manipulation and a lot more money and time for those ones. So that one might be paid for out of this one because we have more time for this one than the other one, so.
Okay. The The other two projects associated with the 2023 grant, there's something called the ArcGIS Pro conversion. We're going to be moving to a new desktop version of the Esri software, and that's going to require us to pump our data through a conversion process so that it can be used in that new software. It's a relatively inexpensive process. It'll cost somewhere around $17,000 or so, and then we've got a little bit of internal work we need to do associated with that. We are going to get to that project in the second half of 2023. And then the third project was expansion of our data portal. That's something we want to add a lot more data offerings, and we will, that may be started in 2023 and it will carry through 2024. All of these projects have to be finished by December 31st of 24. Any questions on any of the grant projects?
Question, Terry, do you allocate people to do that all the time, or is it you have to keep track of their hours doing it separate from other work when they're doing all this scanning and whatever?
Actually, we don't have time to do any scanning. Yeah. We're hiring an outside firm that IT has worked with before. So really, I just walked around with this guy from the firm, and I showed him what I wanted, showed him the records, showed him what I wanted it indexed by. So there is a little time on my behalf as far as getting in there and telling him how to do it and what to do in case he runs across weird crap. But it gets sent out.
Okay.
And then they do have a policy that if we need a record while they're doing their scanning project, they have a 24-hour turnaround time that they'll get it back in case we happen to have a public records request while they're doing it. So, yeah, there is no way I would have staff time to, to do that.
It's a company we've worked with for about a decade now. We found them by doing an RFP when we were scanning the DA's records, and they've just continued to provide the service to us. And
aren't they out of the Chicago area? There or
somewhere
they're in northern Chicago, Illinois. Yeah, something like that.
MSI, MSI, yeah, they did all our stuff too.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Yeah, there was no way we would get it done if we didn't have this. But the girls are excited about having it, especially when we get those super old public records requests for the tax rolls and stuff. It's because we only have one microfiche reader in the building these days. So when ROD's microfiche reader was gone, it was like, how am I going to read these cards? Because.
Any more questions before we move on? Okay, let's shift gears to the potential 2024 imagery acquisition program. Rob has been hosting some meetings at the Regional Planning Commission with the LAOs from all seven Southeast counties. It appears that there's interest from every county at this point for imagery in 2024.
Wow.
Yeah, I was actually a bit, you know, I wouldn't say surprised. I mean, I think it's a good thing because it, with all the development that's occurring in and around the whole Southeast, I think it's a wonderful way to at least continue to have up-to-date imagery covering, you know, the whole seven counties. So we've slid down. We started from, say, 12-inch, you know, imagery or resolution, you know, down to 6-inch, down now to 3-inch. So now we're seeing so many, you know, as far as transportation level features, and with the fact of the currency, you know, now we're seeing all the development that's occurring, and not just like all of a sudden a building shows up, you know, between one, you know, one project to the next project. So, so I think that's been a great enhancement, you know, that's occurred. And the commission, again, you know, through federal transportation funding, is able to help, you know, with each of the counties in acquiring, you know, or helping support the acquisition, and also the administration too, for that matter.
Working with our vendor, we've worked with the last three flights. The approximate cost for that is right around $75,000. Now, Rob has been working to bring cost sharing dollars to the table. And that's traditionally been about $20,000, $21,000 per project. So a net cost to us would be roughly $54,000 if we stick with that same vendor. Now, we have some other options.
Yeah.
There's another vendor out there that is local in Wisconsin. It's Ayers and Associates. And they provide a cheaper alternative. The quality is great.
It's the same.
The quality is the same. It's just that they offer
strictly
ortho for the price.
Also not the...
They do have an oblique, which 45-degree imagery as well that they can add on.
They could, right.
So we have some options there on how we approach this, but I feel fairly comfortable that these are roughly the max numbers we'd be looking at for the imagery. And we have $88,000 budgeted in our capital improvement program for this project. So that's been in there for quite a long time. And costs have recently come down. And we're excited to, you know, potentially fly every 2 years, as is every other county in the region as well.
So is it our plan then, when we do the every 2 years, to do the angled and the ortho every 2 years? Or is this like an every other time we're doing the angled and the ortho? I know the law enforcement folks always like the angled ones. So.
They do. It would be great to say that we would always do both, but there's added expense. When it's essentially two different sets of images that are being processed, and that means it costs more to create all the data that we're looking at. I hope we can get both, but if we can't, we can switch gears and maybe we'll do obliques every other flight, perhaps. So,
Scott, does that 75 include the obliques or not?
That does.
Okay.
It does.
So when you're saying that Ayers is cheaper with obliques?
Not obliques.
Without
obliques.
Because the other company only does it with obliques? Or can you order it without?
They make it difficult
to you
do
get the
ortho only.
Yeah.
They want the package. They want the package.
Yeah. You're signing up for the whole kit and caboodle.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but to give you an idea, if we went with the orthos, oh, that's the wrong one.
Yeah, exactly. So you would have to take
168
times
287.
Oh, what? Someone, you want me to actually
calculator.
Do this?
Someone on the calculator.
Okay, yeah.
168 times 236. Or
287.
Well,
48,216.
48,216. So then you could take that 48,216
minus
the 21,000, and we'd be looking at $27,000 just for an ortho product. So,
and that's not the subscription service, right?
It is not.
No.
Okay.
None of these are. Although our current vendor is moving in that direction. They want us to sign up for 3 flights, and they're moving their business model into that type of...
Isn't that the way everybody's moving these days, I feel like?
Mm-hmm.
I still don't like the idea of them glomming our data. I like to have control of our data, but... That's just me.
And there are other options for those types of programs that may be very well cheaper than what our vendor charges. So, but there's a lot of issues as well. I know we talked up at the Regional Planning Commission about the ownership of the data is one of them. The lack of control over what time of year you fly is another.
I mean, lack of control, accuracy of, you know, there's going to be some possible issues around, like, say, bridges, above ground features. So what will happen is everything's done programmatically. So they're just kicking it off in a program. It spits out the orthos. So what will happen when you get to the bridges and the bridge, you know, the land or the water underneath, will smear or distort the bridge. So when you look at it, the bridge will either be cut and shifted, or it could be warped. So you'll see the bridge kind of like almost curve around and things of that sort. There are ways and techniques to enhance that or to better that, but if you're looking at it more in this automated process, you probably are going to see these defects in the imagery. It's the rest of the, you know, the imagery probably accuracy-wise is the same as you would expect to see with what you're getting with Eagle View. The issue is it's just around some of these, you know, areas that really, anything that would be above ground features that you want to use as a transportation or some other of interest. And buildings, larger buildings.
I was going to say, what about buildings above
building
ground?
Leaning,
yeah.
Leaning and things of that sort that will be askew or will be actually, obscuring the, say, a sidewalk or street at that point in time.
So would that be problematic, especially the bridges, like when we get the emergency response stuff with the feds and they always want the view of that area before the flood and all that kind of stuff? Would that be an issue when we have the skewing on bridges and things like that or not? Or
I don't know. I mean, we've never had that problem.
Right? Yeah.
Right, exactly.
It's always been fixed.
That's the first thing that comes to my mind about where that bridges stuff might be super important. But
I mean, the thing that I always say is, you know, the level of accuracy is still there. The issue is it's more the aesthetics. When somebody sees that one bridge shifted or distorted, they feel the whole product is distorted or inaccurate because of what they see. So it boils down to if 98% of it is accurate, but that last 2% isn't, is the whole thing bad? And, you know, the short answer is, in the mapping world, it's no, it's not. But it's just, these are the, you know, the subtle, defects of the that automated process. The value is it's cheaper. you have to look at it as a balance, you know, to you get it fixed or you don't get it fixed, but yet you pay less. At that point.
And actually, I can't think of an issue that would come up with what you're
thinking. Don't know.
Yeah.
Because I've never had to work with
elevations.
Them on it. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm trying to think back. 2017 is when the last time we had the feds in for public assistance on stuff, and I do not know where the images were obtained for those.
Yeah, because someone else ended up flying the river at that time. Someone paid money to fly it to get the capture the flood at that time. You know, so, and plus the thing is I mean, we have drones that have that capability now too.
Nowadays, yes.
Yeah.
So they can do right to the minute flyover stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was thinking it might.
And I think Eagleville offers that when there are floods that you call them, they'll go up and do it. But I think there's cheaper ways, especially you have like 5 different guys in the force, right, that can, or more that can.
We have a whole drone unit with the sheriff's department. They all have their own individual drones. So, yeah, there's at least, I want to say, 7.
Okay, yeah.
Or if not more.
Any more questions on the imagery program as we sail towards 2024? Okay. One other topic we want to talk about with you today, and that's a potential 2025 LIDAR project. I'm going to hand it over to Rob here.
This is going to be fun.
This has become a very attractive proposal that we seriously need to consider because of the cost.
Yeah.
And Rob, I'm going to let you take it away.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, as you know, on the slide, it kind of last was collected in 2017, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there's just a lot of economic development that's occurred. So at that point, you have maybe a lot of topology near the interstate that has really changed somewhat significantly. USGS kind of has a criteria that uses 7 to 8 years as kind of a threshold for, you know, as far as acquiring, when to acquire new LiDAR or a new LiDAR data set.
And LiDAR is the...
LiDAR is, so LiDAR stands for light detection and ranging. So it's a laser system that scans the ground, or it emits a pulse, and the pulse of the laser pulse, you know, emits out and hits the ground and returns back, and it produces a distance, and using GPS and IMU will give you where that, you know, where that reflection occurs, and give you an elevation. It also gives you reflectance too. So it's an active sensor. So it gives you, like, as it's hitting off of a tree versus asphalt or, you know, other objects, it will give you a grayscale that you can determine, you know, features and things of that sort. So what I was using, because at the time I was using more of a, to give some ideas on, in 2015, the majority, you know, there were five of the seven counties acquired LiDAR. And that was, at the time, it was around roughly 4 points per square meter. So that was there. So some of the counties, as we're looking at that, you know, 7 to 10 year gap, what we're proposing is going to 30 points per square meter. So instead of looking at this as what I view is resolution, like imagery resolution, going from a 12-inch pixel to a 3-inch pixel. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, you know, move to that. And some of the reasons why I was thinking in terms of that is because of what Milwaukee had accomplished, you know, with their LiDAR. They went from doing the 4 points back in 2020. They looked at and said, okay, we want we want this high density, 30 points per square meter. But we're looking at it, you know, for other above ground features. So we're looking at it not only for the elevation data, but now we're looking at it with some other supplemental benefits, like 3D buildings and other aspects. So I think just so that for this point, you know, the discussion is more, you know, does really point density matter? And really, what I'm going to kind of show and demonstrate is, you know, I think it really does, and it does have a benefit. So when you're looking at imagery, it's, you know, I this kind of comparison is what you're going to see, is kind of when you're looking at a 4 point per square meter, is, you know, it's 1 point every 1.6 feet. So it's not quite a 2 foot pixel, but it's nearing that level of 2 foot pixel. Versus 30 points is roughly almost about a half a foot, you know, resolution. So when you're getting those type of disparities, you know, it really can, you can see a lot more detail, and it can pick up a lot more detail. And it's evident in the, when you start looking at the elevation, digital elevation overlay, as compared to, so 2020, you can look at the curbs and you can see the crown of the road, and very distinct. When you go to the 2015, so next slide, you can see how it gets more noisy, it just, and slightly distorted. So you don't have that clean, crisp, you know, linear line detecting that curb gutter interface. You now have a little bit of noise. Still can easily support one. Both products can easily support a 1 foot contour. It's just enhancing the surface modeling at that point. So the next slide, same thing. When you're looking at like a threaded stream, you get the thread, you know, very distinct and detailed. But when you're looking at it from the 2015, it's you're gonna have the same type of, it'll, the next slide, you go down. Yep, you can see it softens up. You know, the in how the threads are not as quite as distinct in what they show. So it's just kind of giving you kind of a, you know, a comparative difference between what each one provides and the level of detail. But more importantly, the next slide is more, it's the above ground feature. And this is where I think it really, you'll start to see the benefit. And this is where I feel that is the greatest asset. So of having a high density, you know, solution. You can see that in here, the high density, the roofs, but more importantly, what I want to point out is you see the sides of the structure, you know, and those points. The lighter system that is flown is slightly at an oblique level. It's the same thing as what you're getting with imagery. Instead of looking at it straight down, usually the traditional LiDAR system, even the Geiger mode, it goes through this emitter, but everything is straight down in a sense, you know, pointing straight down or scanning straight down, where there's, in this system, there's two scanners and they're both, one's, you know, slightly forward and one is slightly back, and they're both at an oblique level. So you're painting more up and down, you know, vertical structures to give you, you know, to enhance the above ground features. So you can go to the next slide. This is what a 4-point, or
maybe
not.
Doesn't like that.
What?
It says, no, my, so, no, this is so my good. Cool slide.
There we go. All right. So what you see is you can see that you get the
you
top.
You lose the edges.
You lose the sides of the houses. You lose the definition of the tree, you know, in what a traditional system, you know, will provide. If we go to the next slide, it's going to be, again, look at the definition of the trees and how they're, the definition of the trees versus the next slide is a 4-point, and they somewhat disappear. So you have also there right now, the state is studying the benefit of using this for even tree identification and tree, you know, heights for some of the parks, to see whether or not that application can be done. That I'm a little on the, I think that's, you know.
How often do they think we're going to run this thing?
No. What they're looking
at. Just the one time?
Just the one time, at least to say how many active trees do we have? How many trees are we managing in our park system?
All right.
And what type of trees are they? You know, how big are they? How thick? You know, what is the diameter of the trunk, and things of that sort. They're not looking at it on a year every year or things like that. They're wondering whether or not that can actually be accomplished.
Yeah.
They're trying to see whether or not that is I'm a little on the fence on that. So I mean, so bottom line is, with this system, you know, tree canopies are well defined. I don't know about individual trees. I think that might be a little, you know, going a bit of a stretch, but we'll see. But definitely, you know, you can get, you know, the building roof lines, the exterior walls and structures, and more importantly, that'll assist in developing a 3D building model, you know, as far as if there's value. Keeping in mind, none of this stuff, I'm mentioning, isn't anything that has to be done today. It could be something you could do tomorrow, or you could do a square mile, or you could do, you know, 300 square miles. It doesn't matter. You can start to, you know, these are all things that can be later on decided and you know, determined. So, like I mentioned, you know, with these additional processes, you know, the commission will provide the contours as we've done in past. So you'll get 1-foot contours. Traditionally speaking, you'll get the USGS type requirements of the, you know, like the double line streams that are 100 feet or wider, the 2-acre ponds. That's you know, consistent, you know, throughout the, you know, this would be the region level acquisition, but you could look at supplementing the and get maybe 10 feet or wider, you know, to help further enhance the topology. So when you look at contours, smaller streams have a general flow and things of that sort. So,
Rob, if Andy's office works with SewerPAC on floodplain study area, mm-hmm. would this data be used for that?
Yes.
Sure. I mean, going forward.
Going forward, yeah, absolutely.
So would you have any, is there the ability, and there would there be any reason to be able to go to like a half foot contour?
We could, absolutely. There would be a limitation as to, you know, use with caution, you know, and test it. Don't just go and say, well, it's half foot, so it's a half foot accuracy. And, you know, you would want to, because I can, it's like anything, when you zoom in to an image, the intended target is, you know, like if you have a, it's at 1 inch equals 50 feet, you should be only viewing it for an ability to measure, you know, when, you know, 1 inch equals 50 feet. But we tend to move into where we go to the intersection and we're looking at it at a 10 scale or something of that nature. So we tend to overuse it because of digital data, because we can keep zooming in. Generating half foot contours, we can certainly do that and look for small little depressions. But to go and say this area is, you know, half foot accuracy, that's getting at a level of accuracy that you would have to supplement. You would need to go and do some additional testing and validation. But if you wanted to use it graphically to kind of to better understand those micro drains, you certainly could do so. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, and just another question then. To get to the 10-foot and the 1 acre, does that require asking for a sewer pack to do the extra work to get that?
Yes, that would actually go to the contractor to get.
Okay, so that's an extra cost.
That's an extra cost, correct. Okay. These are supplemental, like, additional things that could be done, and it could be done on a square mile basis.
But the data's there.
The data's there.
You just have to ask them to do something with it.
That is correct.
Okay. Otherwise, we're just going to get the 1 foot contours.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So refresh my memory. I feel like we didn't used to do LIDAR very often. I feel like it was like a 10 or 20 year thing.
We collected LIDAR in 2010 and 2017.
Okay, so seven.
And the USGS is okay. Really pushing us to do it again.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the big impetus behind this. They have a lot of grant monies to hand out.
We weren't planning on doing it.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't say, I thought we were like early at our
little. We were pretty happy with the product that we got.
Yeah.
Yes. No, this one's more at this point was there was some interest and then it, once, but USGS was wanting to get it, you know, flown. And there's a fairly, so what we've done is, you know, so original budget, and this, don't get shocked. I mean, this is just more the initial budgets of what we were looking at initially. And right now, Kenosha was coming in, you know, roughly at a cost of, So we took two prong approach. The first prong was like AIRS and MV5 would be similar to WROC, would be flying the area and at a cost of, for Kenosha, at $70,000 or $70,500 for if all, say, all seven counties would be flying. USGS gave a quote. And what they're saying is the quote was $140,000, but they would subsidize and help and assist, you know, and put $50,000 towards it, making the cost $89,000. Well, it's more going the USGS route. And there's two different, like, contracts that are, you know, that where USGS is the 100% the prime. They do the contracting. It's all hands off. Completely, they do the QAQC and everything else. Where the AIRS approach, the commission would be helping do the, would be doing the, you know, administration, the QAQC and everything else. So given the fact that, well, it just went off, no one likes it. So the concept was, after seeing the cost of USGS, it's like, forget going the USGS route. I mean, at this point in time, it's cost prohibitive. So going that route, what I was able to do is go the backdoor way and get costs from multiple sources, one being USGS, which is the largest portion. Instead of them going in what's called a gypsy contract, and they being the administrators of the project in itself, we're going to go the what's called a cooperative agreement. And the cooperative agreement is saying, we give you the data and it's going to meet all your expectations, and they're going to pay us for, you know, providing that information, as long, you know, with us documenting the process and everything else. And I did that one other time in 2015, you know, and had good success with that. So they're willing, and the good news is I put it in as $175,000. I've been told that they're willing to, USGS is willing to go to $244,000.
Sure.
So it's even better than what, you know, we're looking at. So so USGS is a big, you know, helper or supporter of this, along with WSDOT. They're looking at, they've committed $50,000. The economic development is also looking at $100,000 of, and then the coastal, you know, being another $60,000. And I have both utility partners, that utilities, possibly utilities, and the MMSD is also willing to contribute up, you know, at this point in time. So what you see as a now, the county's responsibility. So remember, it was $70,500. It's now $28,000, and it should go lower. That's the ceiling.
It's like a no-brainer now.
So.
So really, like $25,000.
Right.
For us.
So let's assume for a second that we don't do this with the region.
Yes.
For 2025.
Correct.
And we decide 3 or 4 years from now we need to do it again. We're looking at
that
$98,000 to do this. Plus we'd have to search out cost share dollars.
Yes.
Which we could probably get.
You would get some
USGS,
yes,
dollars probably. Yes. But we probably would not get the WSDOT, the Economic Development Commission.
Coastal. And
come on, Scott, you had me at 28.
I don't know what you're talking about. I heard that number in the column for USGS is going up. I'm seeing 24, 25.
Yeah.
Right.
Even better.
Right, exactly. Correct. I mean, that's where I was like, yeah. So in the end, the hope and goal would be is
you can't almost pass it up, just like when we did that with Illinois. We were planning on doing it, but the cost from our perspective was not planned for, but was so good, yeah, that you
so
can't
the images
pass it up.
In my mind, so currently, like, obviously planning and development uses LiDAR a fair amount,
yep,
right? So the enhanced images, I'm trying to see if there would be a more uses for that data than what we currently have. Like, I don't think the tree thing, honestly, I don't want to poo-poo on their parade, but the tree thing, I'm like, you know, trees could cut down all the freaking time. We're not reflying this every year, you know, we're not doing this every year.
No.
So the tree thing, not so much. The building thing is kind of interesting, and some of the land going up to the buildings, because, I mean, we've seen shifts in that over the years because the way people dig out things and do, like, water management things.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff
is
kind
of
interesting.
There's a lot of things. I mean, I will sit there and say, having a 3D building, I mean, eventually I look at it in a system. You know, you can start looking at building heights. How do you going to respond on a 911 aspect?
Yeah,
how are you, you know, what type of structure? You can start attributing all kinds of information that could be germane to how you manage you know, communities and whatnot and infrastructure needs at that point.
But I feel like that gets us one step cooler to that cool presentation we had how many years ago where we had like the whole 3D building images and all that stuff. Like it's like one step closer to that with this kind of a thing. But
yeah.
So I'm just thinking that because normally LiDAR right now is really kind of you guys' thing. Like I don't know how many other
people. I'd like to talk more about the half foot contour.
Okay.
And
yeah, I mean,
that would take.
It. The thing that I would be concerned about is more you're going the amount of vertices and in the database.
Oh, I get that. It would be huge.
It would be massive. I'm just
but
warning
if,
you.
If you have it limited to like a certain scale that you can't view it unless you get to a
certain
scale to get in.
Correct.
And I could see that being very helpful.
Already, 1 foot contours are a lot of data to push around.
Yes.
Very intensive on our system
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
so forth.
Sean, you hearing
making
what they're throwing out of there?
Yes. You just quadrupled it.
Yes.
I mean, at least.
Yep. I'm hearing that Andy's going to be speaking to the county board.
Well, so, we need to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
the value and what it would take. I mean, because then that price goes up.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
I mean, no, because the commission's, you know, I was going to run it, and a lot of it is just programmatic.
Yeah.
I will say how I manage it, I've got to now kind of bring it into, normally speaking, I bring it into, say, when I was doing the 1 foot, I brought it into 16 areas for Milwaukee, so give you reference or tile, you know, size, that then I merged into a geodatabase. I would have to times that by 4. And so in how you manage all these vertices connecting up and linking. And on top of that, you get into, because I start looking at depression versus just a regular contour. And when you start now having to further break this down, it will think of it as a depression as it's inside of the air project area, you know, inside of that tile or subtile, where it realizes in the adjacent tile, it might look at it as just a regular contour and not a sink or, you know, something that would be an area that would be concerned of being a depression. So your logic, you know, between some of these, as you're making it smaller and smaller, gets a little bit more unwielding, you know, because of how you have to manage, you know, with smaller areas, size areas.
Yeah, and we can talk beyond.
Yeah,
here,
that's gonna be
so everyone
right.
doesn't get their fall asleep with the technical stuff. But
I'm just saying, if you want to sell like that much extra data storage space to the county board, you might want to find some other uses
that
for
I want that we can talk about.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm just seeing an opportunity here. Do it now for $24,000 to $28,000, or do it 3 years from now for $70,000 somewhere ish.
Yeah.
It's like Andy said. Is this too good an opportunity to pass up? It might be something we need to seriously consider. I think.
And you need the funds in 2025.
How soon would the contract be ready?
Contract wouldn't be until following year 2024.
Yeah.
We would be looking
It'd be
at doing
ready in 2024.
The contract we would contract, and that would be like November of 2024.
That's when you need the funds.
Done in 2025.
You need the funds when
we would need the assurance that you were committed to.
So that would be like the 2025 budget then. Get assurance and
yeah, as long as we knew that you were committed to moving forward with it, that's all we would. I mean, the commission at that point would need. You know,
so if we didn't do his half foot, that's less data, right?
Well, no matter what, you know,
they're looking at
you're
a ton of more data.
You're looking at still a lot of data, but everything is still the same. You know, there is no difference. Was talking about the 1 foot versus half foot, that doesn't change.
Okay.
I mean, that's still the same. That will remain the same. So, cost wise.
Storage-wise is our next question, then, right?
That's, yeah. each tile is 100, or it's going to be one, I think it's 1 gigabyte for a 2,500 foot tile.
Okay, translate that. How many tiles we got here?
I'm trying to think
how many gigabytes.
How many tiles, so we can tell them how many gigabytes we need.
No, you would be like 1.2, 1.3 terabytes of data, roughly.
We'll just get you an external hard drive.
I'm like, I got like a 1.5 terabyte yeah, external hard drive. That's like
nothing nowadays. Here you go.
Performance on that will be terrific.
Yeah, oh yeah, that would suck hard.
So what would happen is you two would have to really put it in the budget in October or starting in June of
24 budget
for 25.
Yeah, part of the reason I was asking when the contract would be ready is we could always talk to the county executive about ARPA funding as well, because this would be, there's a lot of ways that this kind of a project applies to things that happen with ARPA funding. And for $28,000, the funds have to be committed by the end of 2024, but they don't have to be expended until 2026. That's why I asked about when the contract would be ready, because if we signed a contract that contractually obligated the funds, it falls well within the purview of ARPA funding. I'm just trying to, Scott and I talked about different ways to fund it, and I hadn't really thought about that before, but as you're talking through all the different ways that it's used, so much of ARPA is about, road construction and, infrastructure, but also broadband. Well, when you talk about broadband, that LIDAR data with elevations is really valuable, because as we look at how do we convince a wireless internet service provider to come out here, if we're able to provide them current and good, solid LIDAR data, that would be pretty valuable as well. So
yes,
that was the whole direction of my question.
See, that's what I'm talking about finding another use for this information other than just what we currently use it for.
Yeah, line of sight would be great, because you could use both the elevation data for the trees and the topology and basically say I have, and because I've done it before where, what I did was I was doing it for Whistling Straits, and it's for the golf, and they wanted to see what it would look like for a 6-foot person in this back tee, what they could see because that's what they needed to know, that the golfer could actually see this landing zone. It wasn't a blind shot. And so I gave them all the dimensions and said, yes, they could see this amount of fairway. It's the same thing. We're here, now you're looking at above ground, you put an antenna, what would be the reach,
right,
and what would be some of the effects that would possibly shade or cause dropout due to, buildings or trees or something obscuring, the signal, from coming through.
And especially with, we've just seen so many of these buildings getting built and they're blocking line of sight, they're obstructing, and being able to help, and Andy could use that when you're doing planning, so that if we know that a building's going to end up blocking some important communications, we can tell them they have to be responsible for dealing with it. And the sheriff's department would use it if you guys are ever looking to expand what you're doing for your communications network. And I don't even know a lot, and I've got a lot of ideas. There's so many ways that it could be useful.
Or for economic development. This is a very detailed picture of any site across the entire county.
I was thinking, you could save money.
You hand this data to a surveyor or engineer, they can calculate how much dirt they have to move on that site to build their building.
Yep.
And they'd love to have that data up front, and that's why this data is very important.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have, even since 2017, with all the road construction work and building that we've done in the county, I think our topography has changed substantially with all the works that's been going on and shuffling of dirt around.
Well,
we
originally just thought of going I-94. We talked about that for some time, that was really the only area we needed to do something. But at a cost like that, that would have been what the cost would have been. So
just for 94, yeah.
Right.
Does that cost change if the other counties don't do it?
No. They've
opted out?
Yes. Well, that would, yes, to some degree, but they've committed to all doing it at this point. Well, one is still out well, technically two, but, you know, but...
Us and another one.
Us and Ozaki.
Us and Ozaki are the ones that correct. Are just being very careful about committing at this point.
Right.
But the numbers are looking so attractive.
Yeah.
Right. And Ozaki is also the same thing. I think it's doing the exact due diligence and saying, well, wait a minute, if we don't do it, then, you know, we're really missing an excellent opportunity.
So
and you know, and I will say MMSD for Ozaki is already committing to, if they don't do it, they're going to fly half of it because that's half of their area.
Yeah.
That they need for the Milwaukee watershed. So,
unfortunately MMSD is not here.
Not in here. Yeah, you don't get that option. Sorry.
Wait, didn't we give Waukegan some water or something?
Illinois was your benefit.
Get Waukegan to fly up here again.
It's good that it's not always me saying it, you know, so because then they see its value from other areas, and you could always bring it up there, is because that's one of the topics that will be discussed, is potential use of the funding that we have for broadband, and we could potentially have commitment on it very soon instead of needing to wait until budget process or some other things. So if you don't want to, that's fine. I'm just saying that it's always nice when multiple voices are heard.
Definitely.
Yep.
I think it's good to find like another couple of uses for it, because otherwise everybody's eyes is going to glaze over if we just have him talking about the beauty of the picture, and they're going to be like, whatever. How does this help our day-to-day life? That's what we need to tell them, I think. So, yeah. First, we have to tell them what LiDAR is and explain to them
how it's useful. I will sit there and say, as a benefit, and Milwaukee has seen a significant increase in public interest in the LiDAR data, too, for that matter. So they did, you know, they were doing more of the 4 points and things of that sort when they did the high density. They've had more hits in downloading that data than they actually have of the imagery.
Oh, interesting.
That, you know, that kind of changed their view in saying, well, there's so much more. Obviously, they know that and recognize that there's such a greater outside interest in the LiDAR data in itself. So
one of the things we can do going forward is research some of those funding options and try to figure out the best way to do that. Another possibility we haven't really talked about yet is using the 2024 or 2025 WLIP grant dollars for this as well. We don't know how large those grant awards are going to be. We're being told by the state of Wisconsin that they're going to be drastically reduced.
If Joellen were here, she'd tell you they'd be drastically reduced because they're based off of the number of recordings, right. And her recordings are down significantly this year. Right. So,
what's drastically? Drastically, last year's award was $70,000.
Are we talking half?
They're telling us to expect $10,000 to $20,000 now. Now they've historically
they underestimate, to be fair. Yes. But so probably really like 25,000-30,000.
I'd be surprised if we end up right around there. 25,000 or so.
Minus chairs.
So
it's a thing. Yeah. But it's one of those things we can't counter chickens on that, because across the state, like ours are down significantly, but I would say other areas of the state are down even more than we are. So it's a statewide
pot
of money.
And that all comes out as one bucket and it's out. It's not just what we do or.
Nope. We're all grouped together and then they divvy it out to all the counties. So the grants were initially started in order to help a lot of those counties that were behind in electronic land records, the smaller, more rural counties that didn't have the money or the budget to do it, to help them. So when the money goes back out, we generally get less back than we give in because of that, because we are a bigger county that has more money coming into it. So we generally donate to the smaller rural counties, but it's, I would say, probably 25 grand is probably realistic.
What we can expect.
But yeah.
Every time a deed is recorded related to land, $7 goes to the state of Wisconsin. They take a bit of it for program administration, and then the rest of it they send back to the counties through this grant program, is how it's structured.
Divided equally.
Mm-hmm.
divided by 7.
Just giving our money back.
Yeah. Well, we get a portion of our money.
Not quite divided by 72.
You send it to us. Yeah. We'll take a little and give it right back.
Yeah.
Because the because the counties that have more in their coffers don't get as much. Like
yeah.
Right. I was just saying the $7
yeah.
take everybody
$7.
And then divide it by 72.
Yeah, yeah. It's
even
it is.
You might do.
And with interest rates being up, there just have been far fewer recordings going on. It's a traditional way that mine and Joellen's records match like this, you know. So generally, the interest rates go up, my interest on investment goes up, but her recordings go down in revenue. So it's a just normal thing. So, but yeah, it's going to go down because 70,000 was more than they told us we were going to get last year. You call it, didn't they say like 45 or something like that last year?
They told us we were going to get about 50.
Yeah.
But they wanted to empty their coffers. They're afraid that someone was going to grab the money and use it for general budget and so forth. So they started spitting out more money than they traditionally have.
Yeah, but for a long time it was about 40,000 to 50,000 for a long time. Yeah.
But this year will be a big shock.
Do they ever push out estimates on the funding for the next year, or what time of the frame did they come out?
10,000 to 20,000
is what their estimate is.
And they're not really putting that on paper
either. No, it's just something they.
That's what I was looking for. Was an official paper one.
No.
You love that estimate. We're 70 last year. We're just going to be 10. I mean, it's going to be more than that. We know, but we're just going to make it worst case scenario. Wow.
Yeah, it's real. So I don't know about that, but it's good. It's interesting. Like. I will say that normally when you talk about LIDAR, I fall asleep. But this was a little more fun.
Good. Fun.
Only time I remember ever using LIDAR was actually when I was an undergraduate student at Parkside, and I had an environmental geology class that I took.
Good.
And in that class, we had to create, like, essentially plan an area based on like the soil usage and the LIDAR data and all that fun stuff and create rain gardens and runoff and all that kind of stuff. It was the only time in my life I've ever used a lot of the information we have here.
LIDAR is great. I think there's a lot of uses.
So that wraps up LIDAR, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Or do you need to vote or?
No,
there's no vote.
Yeah, there's.
Is there any new business? No? Great. Is there a
motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn. Scott, do you have anything else?
I just want to add, we'll meet in mid-November again, maybe early December, depending on everyone's schedule. There will be a potential vote on the use of those 2024 grant dollars.
Yeah.
So,
good.
We will outline those projects. Those are normally, you know, vetted by the CALM committee beforehand, before we bring them to you, to make sure they're
viable
projects and so forth. And CALM will meet typically in early October at that time. So if anyone has any project ideas, feel free to let us know.
And now, is there a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, everyone.
I like it. Not debatable.
Oh, too funny. All right.